This is a continuation of the oral history interview with Judge James Redden in his chambers on April 19th, 1995. What were your sons up to at this point in time?
Going to school. They were, I think, junior high. We moved over the west side, and I think at that point, Jim was in high school. I think it started high school, and Bill went to McLaughlin. I think he was in junior high, but they were right in that age group, and maybe a little younger than that. But in any event, they were typical teens or near teens at that time, and for those times, which were the pretty difficult times for a kid, I think, in the 60s. But.
Mm-hmm. How did they fare during the legislative years with the back and forth school experience?
No, we still talk about it. I think we thought, that is Joan and I, thought that it would be a great adventure and a very good thing for a youngster to do that. They would learn a lot. I'm not too sure that's true. I think when you say to a kid who's in school, come on, we're leaving for Salem, and then try to fit him back in the community, it's pretty tough on him. And they, I don't think, were very happy where they were here in Salem. And Joan and I were very busy during the day. And although one thing did have the advantage of is that Joan didn't have to go to work as early as I did, and she did not go to work until kids were off to school and she was home when they got home. And that makes a heck of a big difference. But there at the legislature, with social life too, and we were out frequently on the evenings. We had the weekends full time, but frequently I would go to Medford over the weekend and get some work done. So I don't think it was a joyous event for them. And they don't look back on it as one either.
When you were in Medford and didn't have to make these trips up to Salem every week, did you have time to spend time with your sons, or was your law practice pretty demanding also?
Oh, no, it was, we spent a lot of time together. It's typical of at least a small-time law practice. I mean, I worked hard, and I worked usually on Saturday mornings, but at that age, the kids had their own interests anyway, so they didn't want me to go out and play with them, but I was always there every evening, almost every evening. For dinner, if I had a trial going, I might miss dinner, come home late. But we spent a lot of time together. I had trials all over Southern Oregon, and so I might be in Klamath Falls for two or three days, or in Roseburg trying a lawsuit. But we had a lot of time. Mm-hmm.
Did you take family vacations together?
Yeah. We recall doing the traditional Disneyland and visited Joan's family in San Diego. We bought a new car and drove all the way down there and back, and those sort of things. Fairly typical.
Do you take advantage of your proximity to the great outdoors down there in Southern Oregon?
I enjoy it. I know that Jim and I went lake fishing once. He wasn't crazy about it, and I didn't like lake fishing that much, and I did some ocean fishing, and we all did. Jim and I and Jason Bow and Jason's sons went out ocean fishing once or twice. Bill, the younger one, is the one that liked to fish, and he fished with his friends. He's still a pretty good fisherman. Jim and I never really mastered it. And as a result, probably didn't enjoy it as much, but that was great country. There are lakes that had more fish than you could catch, and Rogue River fishing. We went salmon fishing on the Rogue with, I think it was Jim, and he hooked a salmon, pulled him right off the seat. So, yeah, we did all that stuff.
Now, one topic that, I guess I've sort of alluded to it, but I meant to mention it explicitly. In this period between between the legislature and the law office. I know that, or the treasurer's office rather. I know that you were a delegate to the 68 Democratic Convention.
Right. God, a disaster. But yeah, I was.
So you'd come back from the 67 session and were in your law practice, and then how did you? How did the nomination process work?
Well, it was elections, statewide elections. Matter of fact, you just filed, your name was on the ballot. Nobody campaigned for it. It was strictly a name familiarity thing, or almost all name familiarity. I did not expect, my name was on a ballot once before that, and I lost. It was for, I put it for Southern Oregon. This time I put it on a statewide ballot without too many expectations of winning, but I had a great slogan. I think it's something real meaningful, like you're fighting minority leader who opposed the sales tax or something like that. And I didn't even say who I supported, and I won. So we got to go back, and of course the 68 convention was probably one not to attend, but pretty grim affair. But I guess I can say I attended an historic occasion.
That's right. Well, it was what was the experience like at the convention?
Well, it was bad. I mean, just Chicago was virtually under siege. I can remember the convention was held starting at 5 at night. It'd go to early hours in the morning just to keep TV happy. It was run for TV. It was tumultuous. Johnson was not running. There were demonstrations constantly. And the big riot, they referred to as a riot, which was televised into the hall and exaggerated tremendously. I thought that television coverage of it from Walter Cronkite on down was abysmal. I can remember one instance where the delegation next to ours, I forget the state, but anyway, some guy came in after a recess and he was intoxicated. And two of his friends went in with him, and he was about to fall asleep. So they got up, one on each side, and the aisles were tightly packed. It shouldn't have been in Chicago. They're supposed to have a new hall. Of course, it wasn't finished, but anyway, they tried to get him out at the same point where, I think it was Dan Rather, and a guy behind him carrying a camera started going down the aisle in the other direction, thinking they had a situation where security was removing this guy for being bad. And these two folks saw these guys coming down the aisle one way, and they were carrying this guy out the other, and they just kept going, and they knocked Rather and the cameraman right in his ass. And at which point, I saw the tapes later, Walter Cronkite exclaimed, "Ah, what thugs, what thugs!" Give me a break. But this was all televised to the nation, who of course thought Cronkite never exaggerated anything, but they did a terrible job on it. It was bad enough without their help.
Mm-hmm. And of course, what McCarthy was contesting Humphreys, I guess, for the nomination.
Barely. we asked him to, we were bound to vote for McCarthy, at least on the first ballot. I forget what the restrictions were, we had to, on one ballot. And some of the delegates were very pro-McCarthy, some were not very pro-McCarthy. I was one that was not. I got involved, there was a little boomlet for Ted Kennedy, which wasn't very serious, but I got involved in that and got immediately telegrams from home saying, "You cannot violate the law, you must vote for McCarthy." Well, I'm going to vote what the law said I had to vote. But we tried to get McCarthy to attend our caucus, and he would not. He didn't come to Chicago until late. He was virtually out of the race, but he would not release the delegation nor give us assurance that he was a serious candidate. But he, as I say, would not withdraw, and to this day hasn't withdrawn. I thought, you know, we came out of there with a great nominee and Hubert Humphrey, but McCarthy never forgave him, and many of McCarthy's followers never forgave him. They woke up with a couple of weeks to go to election and realized they were going to get Nixon. So they got off their duffs and began to work, but it was too late. And we ended up with Nixon instead of Hubert Humphrey. And my feelings as a result for Gene McCarthy aren't really all that pleasant. I had supported Robert Kennedy in the primary and was active in his Oregon campaign.
Well, of course, then that was another tragedy of that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was a miserable event. just terrible.
Yeah. What did you think when you heard the news of his assassination?
Oh, well, I guess like most people who knew him and supported him, it was devastating, especially in light of what had happened to his brother. So just 68 was the worst year of my life, I think.
Now, you said that that you were not a very enthusiastic vote for McCarthy, and you've explained kind of some of the problems with McCarthy after the convention, but what made you not enthusiastic, you know, at the time of the convention?
Well, for one thing, I didn't think he could get elected. I admired him for his stance in New Hampshire and for his opposition to the war. At that time, I didn't agree with him fully. I mean, those are the days where we looked at the domino theory, and it made some sense if you lived before and during World War II. Of course, it made no sense as it turned out. But I was like a lot of other people, just beginning to be convinced, and we began to be convinced after Johnson was elected, and began to do what he accused Goldwater of wanting to do. But in any event, I didn't think he had the stuff to be a president. I thought he was in there on somewhat of a personal crusade, ego trip. When it became apparent he was not going to win, I thought it was time for him to get out and to support somebody else. Mm-hmm. And at the convention, it was certainly time for him to either get in or get out. If Gene McCarthy was very popular with those kids who raised so much hell in Chicago, if he had asked them not to or given them any encouragement not to, they would not have. His encouragement was in the other direction. Yet at the same time, he would not come to, for instance, the Oregon delegation and say, I am a serious candidate, nor would he come and say, you're released, you can vote for whoever you think is going to be nominated and thereby enhance the state's reputation if you want to be selfish, or whoever you think you should vote for if I'm not a candidate. He would not do that. Not my kind of guy.
Did you see any of the action on the streets while you were there?
I don't think so. We were, every time we rode out to the convention center, why there were signs and protesters. But I think all the real fight that broke out, Jackson Park, I think it was televised into the convention. And I noticed that they were repeating it without admitting it. And so the indication was that it would on for hours and hours and hours. Actually, bad as it was, it hadn't gone on that long. And of course, it tore the convention apart. It was not a pleasant event.
So there was a reflection of mood inside the hall also.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Now, you also mentioned that after the convention, of course, and Humphrey's nominated, then McCarthy supporters didn't swing behind Hubert Humphrey. Well, a couple of questions. One is, what did you think Hubert Humphrey might have done with respect to Vietnam had he been elected?
Well, he announced before the election that I forget his formal election, but that he was going to back a policy of getting the hell out. So there wasn't any question mm-hmm. about what he would have done. Mm-hmm. That was a great break with Johnson. And earned Johnson enmity, but there's no question that he would not take the stance that Nixon took. And Nixon got in, and he was another Johnson in that he, by God, wouldn't be the first president to lose a war. You know, you got to recognize when to hold them and when to fold them. And neither of those guys could do it. But there's no question in my mind that John Kennedy, had he lived, would have gotten out as gracefully as possible. But it would have been after he was reelected, because if he had tried to do that or even mentioned it, before the election, why it would have been who lost China all over again. And there was no question that Hubert Humphrey, because he publicly proclaimed it, was going to take steps to get out of there.
Mm-hmm. Although I guess he was to some extent, he was his reputation suffered by association with the Johnson administration.
Oh, sure, sure. Yeah, sure.
Did Johnson's decision not to run come as a surprise to you?
No, you know, we were, Joan and I can still remember it. We talk about it every now and then. We're watching that speech, and it was just the tenor of it. And he came to the point, and you could tell he was going to say something significant. I said to Joan, well, I did not say, gee, our president. I said something about Lyndon Johnson. I bet he withdraws. And of course, it became obvious. He said, the interest of this, the interest of that. And he did indeed withdraw. And there's immediate speculation after that as to who would benefit by this. And I can remember that none of the wise guys that always analyze such speeches came up with Humphrey until after about 5 minutes. Oh, yeah! But anyway, yeah, it wasn't, when the speech started, I didn't think he would, but by the time he got around to announcing it, for some reason I thought, oh, that's what that guy's going to do, and that's what he did. Mm-hmm. I think he regretted it after that, but he very smartly, I guess, made the decision.
Do you think he might have won had he stayed in?
No. No, his pride would not, well, you know, it's hard to say, no, how do I know, would not have allowed him any graceful exit. On the other hand, he would have been running against Nixon, who would have been criticizing for not being tough enough. So who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe if Vietnam may not have been the deciding factor. But I think Lyndon Johnson, in spite of all of his tremendous accomplishments on the domestic front, so ruined his reputation as a leader with his foreign policy, whether that was right or wrong, he could not have been reelected. Mm-hmm. I think he knew that.
Mm-hmm. But you thought that Humphrey maybe would have had a chance in the election?
Oh yeah, it turned out to be very, very close.
Yeah, that's true, it was a close election.
And if those folks who jumped in at the last minute had jumped in before that, Humphrey would have won. That's another thing that I guess I resented about McCarthy, is that if you got to take a choice between Hubert Humphrey and Richard Nixon, and you've proclaimed yourself a selfless liberal, there's not much question about what you're going to do. On the other hand, if you regard yourself as a saint and above any criticism, and far better than anyone else, then I guess there's no question what you do either, and there's no question about what he did or didn't do.
And what did you think of Nixon at the time?
Hmm?
What did you think of Nixon at the time?
Not much. I remembered Nixon from his vice presidential years, and I don't know, the guy was everything everybody knows he was. He had some great moments as president, going to China, but I don't know. He always had his own agenda, and that basic underlying ambition, which he would do anything to satisfy. I never have liked the guy, that's all.
Okay, well, so you left the legislature in 67, went to the convention in 68, and then was your law practice, was there anything, any cases or things you were involved in during that period that come to mind as really notable? Or
that's what I can think of. I think it took a while to catch up on trials that hadn't moved while I was away, and I went home, got those ready to try, and I just started trying lawsuits that had piled up, and pretty much tending to business. And I think about that time, Tom McCall appointed me to the, that was during that period of time, to the Public Employee Relations Board, Then I got involved with the collective bargaining for public employees, and he asked me to be in a task force on that. And this is all after the legislature and before I entered the treasurer's race. And a group of us drafted some legislation to give collective bargaining rights for public employees, and that was a bill, as a matter of fact, introduced in 1972, the legislature.
Mm-hmm. Had your law practice changed much since?
Not significantly. I think we had fewer clients because they didn't get the attention that they thought they had to, but it built up. It got to be very healthy practice, very short time.
Mm-hmm. And apart from these involvements with the McCall appointments that you just mentioned, were there any other political activities that you were involved in prior to the treasurer's race?
Well, not specifically. I know that as a member of that, appointed that board, that I didn't get involved in name, certainly, but I'm sure I was involved in, I know that I'd always been a supporter of Bob Duncan, and I was involved in some of his campaigns, and I think it was about that time that he ran against Wayne Morris, and that Bob Pack would upset Wayne Morris.
Right.
That happened in there.
That was the, I guess, the 68.
I was involved in that campaign. And let me see, when was McGovern? I got involved in the McGovern campaign as, I think I was statewide campaign manager by title, his 72 campaign. But as agreed between the two of us, I could not be very active, both because of my mother's health and the restrictions of my practice and service on that board. Mm-hmm. But I was very much involved in that campaign. So politics was still there, quite a part of it.
Mm-hmm. So you were involved in McGovern's campaign then, so mm-hmm. By that time you must have pretty much settled down on the anti-Vietnam side of the fence, huh?
Oh, yeah. I ran into Gene McCarthy again during that campaign, too.
Oh, yeah.
I met with him and Wayne Morris. Wayne Morris, very kind. I was running, this is after I got in the treasurer's race. And nobody in Portland knew me from Adams off Fox, but there was going to be a rally for Morris at Portland State University. And McCarthy was coming to town to support Morris. And so it was a good opportunity for an unknown like myself to appear before a group of students who dearly loved Wayne Morris, who was running for election to the Senate again. And Gene McCarthy, who had always been their hero. I will say the crowd was a lot smaller. I think times were changing. We didn't realize it. But in any event, I met with the two of them before we walked over to the school in Gene McCarthy's hotel room. And Wayne Morris was trying to get Gene McCarthy to endorse George McGovern. And Gene McCarthy would not do it because McGovern was not pure enough. That's all I'll say about McCarthy.
That's all you say about McGovern, you said?
About McCarthy.
Oh, about McCarthy.
No, McGovern's a wonderful fellow.
Yeah, well, what would you say about McGovern?
Oh, he just that. He was just a very warm, intelligent, friendly guy who was perceived, certainly, as far more liberal than the public he asked to serve. But he was more a populist than a liberal. He was, after all, elected to the United States Senate from one of the more conservative states in the Union. He knew the farm bills and the farm issues better than anybody in the Senate. Would have been an excellent president. He was absolutely right on the war, and was just the wrong candidate at the wrong time. Even though Watergate broke during that election campaign, nobody paid attention until after the election was over. The Democratic convention that nominated McGovern was not helpful. At least it's televised, you know. And so he just never did have a chance at it. But he was a thoroughly decent guy, and I think would have made a good president. Mm-hmm.
Now, you mentioned, of course, that this is a very full year and a very tough year, at least partly because of your mother's situation. Who did she receive any special care when she was living in your home? Did she have to have a nurse, or did who?
Oh yeah, we had the family doctor. Dr. Mayer came by whenever we needed it. They didn't have a hospice then. She was in and out of the hospital. They encouraged us to look for a nursing home when we took a look at one of them, just figured we'd do it at home, and the burden fell on Joan, about 98-99% of that, to take care of her at home. She was obviously very ill. But Dr. Mayer, who was a friend as well as our, was her doctor, came over at just any phone call, and he'd drop everything and come over. And then when it got worse, she went back into the hospital, and that's where she died, mm-hmm. in the hospital.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, the 72 race for treasurer was pretty interesting, too.
Yeah. I've often said that was probably a mistake because it was too close to by leaving the legislature and all of the personal things, including my mother's health. And I don't think we were ready for it. But what happened there was that Alice Corbett was nominated as a Democratic candidate for treasurer, and she ran against Jeannie Dost in the primary, and Phil McCallman was another candidate that ran against
right,
her.
Exactly.
And she defeated both of them. Craig Berkman was a Republican nominee. And as time wore on, I remember I got a call from a reporter from, I think, the Oregonian. I think it was Harry Bodine. I'm not sure. And he said, "Hey, you're a lawyer. What's going to happen, do you think, to this challenge that's in the Supreme Court now?"
That was McCallman.
No. This challenge, I guess he did make the challenge. That's right. After he was defeated, he filed the challenge because Alice Corbett had been a state senator, had been defeated as state senator, had run again and used the slogan "Re-elect Alice Corbett as state senator," won that election as state senator, was taken to court by Vern Cook, whom she defeated. Under the law then, the state Supreme Court ruled that she had fudged, violated the election law by saying re-elect Alice Corbett when she had not been an incumbent at the moment, and decreed Vern Cook into that slot. And part of the punishment was that she could not run again for X years. She did. She did on the advice of her political advisor, Ken Rinke, that what the Supreme Court decision would be read as was can't run for the Senate or the legislature again, but that it would be okay to run for some other office. And so she ran for some other office, and Phil McCallman, whom she defeated in the primary, filed this challenge against her. Nobody took it seriously. And I remember telling her, "Sparta, oh hell, it's getting too late now to kick her out of there." I'm sure they're just sitting on it and waiting. The argument's old, they'll just say it's okay. Much to my surprise and everybody else's, why they threw off the ballot, and it was, talk about late primaries, it was about Labor Day, mm-hmm. just before Labor Day, to rule her off the ballot, and the state of the law was such then that the Democrats were to hold a convention, and did hold a convention, and to nominate the Democratic nominee for treasurer to run against Berkman. When it first happened, I was not at all interested, but I got together with a group of people, however, and we were trying to convince Bob Duncan taking the run at treasurer, not that he had any interest in it, but treasurers never have any interest in it. They want to be governor. Bob had just come off a defeat by Wayne Morse. But in any event, that was our intent to try to talk Bob into it. And we were unsuccessful in doing that. The other candidates, most of whom had been in the primary, lined up for the convention. And eventually, I was convinced, and I was somewhat of a reluctant candidate, but I did enter it. The biggest opposition at that point was not Phil McCallman, but it was Frank Ivancy, mayor of Portland.
Right, who also didn't run in the primary, but tossed his hat in
That's
at that
right.
point. Just trying to, actually now would be a good time to